4. Within space, life. The first effect of the cosmogonic emanations is the framing of the world stage of space. The second is the production of life within the frame, life polarized for self-reproduction under the dual form of the male and female. It is possible to represent the entire process in sexual terms as a pregnancy and birth. This idea is superbly rendered in another metaphysical genealogy of the Maoris.
From the conception, the increase. From the increase, the thought. From the thought, the remembrance. From the remembrance, the consciousness. From the consciousness, the desire. The word became fruitful. It dwelt with the feeble glimmering. It brought forth night, the great night, the long night, the lowest night, the loftiest night, the thick night to be felt, the night to be touched, the night not to be seen, the night ending in death. From the nothing, the begetting. From the nothing, the increase. From the nothing, the abundance. The power of increasing, the living breath. It dwelt with the empty space and produced the atmosphere which is above us, the atmosphere which floats above the earth. The great firmament above us dwelt with the early dawn, and the moon sprang forth. The atmosphere above us dwelt with the glowing sky, and thence proceeded the sun. Moon and sun were thrown up above as the chief eyes of heaven. Then the heavens became light. The early dawn, the early day, the midday, the blaze of day from the sky. The sky above dwelt with Hawaiki and produced land.
About the middle of the 19th century, Paiore, a high chieftain of the Polynesian island of Ana'a, drew a picture of the beginnings of creation. The first detail of this illustration was a little circle containing two elements, Te Tumu, the foundation, a male, and Te Papa, the stratum rock, a female.
The universe, said Paiore, was like an egg, which contained Te Tumu and Te Papa. It at last burst and produced three layers superposed, one layer below supporting two above. On the lowest layer remained Te Tumu and Te Papa, who created man, animals, and plants. The first man was Matata, produced without arms. He died shortly after he had come into being. The second man was Aitu, who came with one arm but without legs, and he died like his elder brother. Finally, the third man was Hoatea, sky space, and he was perfectly formed. After this came a woman named Hoatu, fruitfulness of earth. She became the wife of Hoatea, and from them descended the human race. When the lowest layer of earth became filled with creation, the people made an opening in the middle of the layer above, so that they could get upon it also, and there they established themselves, taking with them plants and animals from below. Then they raised the third layer, so that it should form a ceiling to the second, and ultimately established themselves up there also, so that human beings had three abodes. Above the earth were the skies, also superposed, reaching down and supported by their respective horizons, some being attached to those of the earth. And the people continued to work, expanding one sky above another in the same manner, until all was set in order.
The main portion of Paiore's illustration shows the people spreading out the world, standing on each other's shoulders to elevate the skies. On the lowest stratum of this world appear the two original elements, Te Tumu and Te Papa. To the left of them are the plants and animals of their begetting. Over to the right are to be seen the first man, malformed, and the first successful men and women. In the upper sky appears a fire surrounded by four figures, representing an early event in the history of the world. The creation of the universe was scarcely terminated when Tongaroa, who delighted in doing evil, set fire to the highest heaven, seeking thus to destroy everything. But fortunately, the fire was seen spreading by Tamatua, Oru, and Ruanuku, who quickly ascended from the earth and extinguished the flames. The image of the cosmic egg is known to many mythologies. It appears in the Greek Orphic, Egyptian, Finnish, Buddhistic, and Japanese. In the beginning, this world was merely non-being, we read in a sacred work of the Hindus.
It was existent. It developed. It turned into an egg. It lay for the period of a year. It was split asunder. One of the two eggshell parts became silver, one gold. That which was of silver is the earth. That which was of gold is the sky. What was the outer membrane is the mountains. What was the inner membrane is cloud and mist. What were the veins are the rivers. What was the fluid within is the ocean. Now, what was born therefrom is yonder sun.
The shell of the cosmic egg is the world frame of space, while the fertile seed power within typifies the inexhaustible life dynamism of nature. Space is boundless by re-entrant form, not by great extension. That which is a shell floating in the infinitude of that which is not. This succinct formulation by a modern physicist, illustrating the world picture as he saw it in 1928, gives precisely the sense of the mythological cosmic egg. Furthermore, the evolution of life, described by our modern science of biology, is the theme of the early stages of the cosmogonic cycle. Finally, the world destruction, which the physicists tell us must come with the exhaustion of our sun and ultimate running down of the whole cosmos, stands presaged in the scar left by the fire of Tongaroa. The world destructive effects of the creator destroyer will increase gradually until, at last, in the second course of the cosmogonic cycle, all will devolve into the sea of bliss. Not uncommonly, the cosmic egg bursts to disclose, swelling from within, an awesome figure in human form. This is the anthropomorphic personification of the power of generation, the mighty living one, as it is called in the Kabbalah. Mighty Ta'aroa, whose curse was death, he is the creator of the world. Thus we hear from Tahiti, another of the South Sea Isles. Ta'aroa, Tahitian dialect, is Tongaroa. He was alone. He had no father, nor indeed a mother. Ta'aroa simply lived in the void. There was no land, nor sky, nor sea. Land was nebulous. There was no foundation. Ta'aroa then said,
O space for land, O space for sky, useless world below existing in nebulous state, continuing and continuing from time immemorial, useless world below, extend.
The face of Ta'aroa appeared outside. The shell of Ta'aroa fell away and became land. Ta'aroa looked. Land had come into existence. Sea had come into existence. Sky had come into existence. Ta'aroa lived godlike, contemplating his work. An Egyptian myth reveals the demiurge creating the world by an act of masturbation. A Hindu myth displays him in yogic meditation, with the forms of his inner vision breaking forth from him to his own astonishment, and standing then around him as a pantheon of brilliant gods. And in another account from India, the All-Father is represented as first splitting into male and female, then procreating all the creatures according to kind.
In the beginning, this universe was only the self in human form. He looked around and saw nothing but himself. Then, at the beginning, he cried out, "I am He," whence came the name I. That is why even today, when a person is addressed, he first declares, "It is I," and then announces the other name that he goes by. He was afraid. That is why people are afraid to be alone. He thought, "But what am I afraid of? There is nothing but myself." Whereupon his fear was gone. He was unhappy. That is why people are not happy when they are alone. He wanted a mate. He became as big as a woman and man embracing. He divided this body, which was himself, in two parts. From that there came husband and wife. Therefore, this human body, before one marries a wife, is like one of the halves of a split pea. He united with her, and from that were born men. She considered, "How can he unite with me after producing me from himself? Well then, let me hide myself." She became a cow, but he became a bull and united with her. From that were born cattle. She became a mare, he a stallion. She became a she-ass, he a he-ass, and united with her. From that were born the one-hoofed animals. She became a she-goat, he a he-goat. She became a ewe, he a ram, and united with her. From that were born goats and sheep. Thus did he project everything that exists in pairs, down to the ants. Then he knew, "Indeed, I am myself the creation, for I have projected the entire world," whence he was called creation.
The enduring substratum of the individual and of the progenitor of the universe are one and the same, according to these mythologies. That is why the demiurge in this myth is called the self. The Oriental mystic discovers this deep reposing, enduring presence in its original androgynous state when he plunges in meditation into his own interior.
Him on whom the sky, the earth, and the atmosphere are woven, and the mind, together with all the life breaths, him alone know as the one soul. Other words dismiss. He is the bridge to immortality.
Thus it appears that though these myths of creation narrate of the remotest past, they speak at the same time of the present origin of the individual. We read in the Hebrew Zohar,
"Each soul and spirit, prior to its entering into this world, consists of a male and female united into one being. When it descends on this earth, the two parts separate and animate two different bodies. At the time of marriage, the Holy One, blessed be He, who knows all souls and spirits, unites them again as they were before, and they again constitute one body and one soul, forming, as it were, the right and left of one individual. This union, however, is influenced by the deeds of the man and by the ways in which he walks. If the man is pure and his conduct is pleasing in the sight of God, he is united with that female part of his soul which was his component part prior to his birth."
This Kabbalistic text is a commentary to the scene in Genesis where Adam gives forth Eve. A similar conception appears in Plato's Symposium. According to this mysticism of sexual love, the ultimate experience of love is a realization that beneath the illusion of two-ness dwells identity. Each is both. This realization can expand into a discovery that beneath the multitudinous individualities of the whole surrounding universe, human, animal, vegetable, even mineral, dwells identity. Whereupon the love experience becomes cosmic, and the beloved who first opened the vision is magnified as the mirror of creation. The man or woman knowing this experience is possessed of what Schopenhauer called the science of beauty everywhere. He goes up and down these worlds, eating what he desires, assuming what forms he desires, and he sits singing the song of universal unity, which begins, "Oh, wonderful! Oh, wonderful! Oh, wonderful!"